You're listening to Soccer Report Extra with Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. He is
Owen O'Callaghan.
And at the controls, we have producer Luke Crawford. So let's get right into it, Owen. Pretty hard to ignore the effect of Zlatan Ibrahimovic on the weekend. 3-0 up, LAFC cruising. Carlos Vela can see the headlines. He is the star of the show. And this big Swede comes into the game and kind of turned it.
Oh, it was crazy, wasn't it? Because I actually... and this is the joy of Twitter, isn't it? Everything is held there for posterity.
Yes.
I tweeted about how poor the Galaxy had been, particularly through that first half. You know, it was a derby and you're always looking for teams to exert a little bit of that sort of derby attitude. So you wanted them to be a bit hungry, grit between their teeth, and for them to properly kind of get across to everyone watching and everyone in the stands that this was a derby and there was a lot on the line. And I felt that LAFC did that and the Galaxy were kind of caught a little bit. And so I took to Twitter to register how disappointed I was in LA Galaxy. And then I opened things up to people chirping in at full time and beyond that, who kind of said, hey, maybe you should have changed the channel at a certain stage because, boom, are you not aware of the result? By which stage, of course, I had become aware of the result. And all of those things that I said about Zlatan on last week's podcast, he obviously listens to it. He obviously subscribes to us, which is great. Hey, Zlatan, how are you doing? Hope your recovery's going well. That first strike, goodness gracious. People will dwell on the goalkeeper and all that sort of stuff, but it takes, and I'm sure you're kind of the same mindset, where it takes a certain type of player to even contemplate.
Attempt it.
I always remember, like, this is going far back, but I remember as a kid sitting down in front of the TV and watching a very nondescript game, Man United against Chelsea, and Eric Cantona trying this. The ball kind of broke to him on the halfway line, and Dimitri Karine was a Chelsea goalkeeper at the time, and he'd come off his line to head this ball clear because he'd come out of his box, and Cantona latched onto it around the halfway line, and he just instinctively thumped this lob towards goal, and obviously Karine was off his line. The ball bounced off the ground and hit the crossbar and went over the bar, and I'm not sure who the commentator was, but he dwelled on the fact that what other player on the pitch would even have contemplated performing this sort of skill set? And when someone does something like Zlatan did at the weekend, there's only a certain caliber of player who would even think about it in his mind, not to mind actually execute it to such a fine degree. And it's weird. Go on. I'm interrupting your flow.
I was going to say, I think that's what the word audacious was made up for.
Yeah, and do you know what?
It was audacious.
The other thing about big players, which we've probably talked about before, is that the whole reason that they're paid, such a fee and they're kind of, there's such a fanfare made about their arrival, is that at those killer moments, they provide you with something that no other player can do. And in the case of Ibrahimovic, he certainly did that. One of the great, lovely things in the aftermath was watching all of those kind of local LA-based sports reporters who suddenly had to try and pronounce the words Zlatan Ibrahimovic together and watch them all struggle with the auto cue. I think that was the one. You know, when you always have those MLS stories that all those sports guys go, oh, not a soccer story. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. So I think Abrahamovic was done a couple of times, and Zoltan was sort of offered up a few times. But also the thing is, when was the last time a Bob Bradley team had a 3-goal lead and absolutely fell apart?
Bollocksed it. But here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. I'm watching the game and I'm trying to, watch it and going, okay, I'm watching it, again and watching it
from an analytical perspective.
Yes.
And I can't see, and this is the thing, I can't see anything that really changed apart from Zlatan coming on and intimidating the hell out of the LAFC team.
There was that moment.
Because I can't say there was any technical changes, right? It was just, the only thing I could notice was the Galaxy were more resistant to getting hit on the counter-attack. They were a bit more compact for most of the second half. They were stretched in the first half, but that was about it. I couldn't come up with any great insight, any great tactical kind of, and this is how they changed the game, other than they brought the big Swede on.
And the other thing was, did you not get that sense that LAFC had kind of got the memo of, guys, we do know that at one stage they're going to bring Ibrahimovic off the bench. And when he did come on, it was, oh, shit. Oh, shit, here he comes. It's like the ringer that the other team brings on a Thursday night to five-a-side. You know that person's there in the mix. And like, oh,
and he's going to come on. But it was, wasn't it just LAFC were just cruising.
Well, I mean,
they were in no trouble at all before that first goal went in.
Well, because also as well, I mean, there are certain things. Like, I mean, Ashley Cole, goodness me. I mean, you know, that first half for Vela's first one, where he races out trying to play the 1-2 on the edge of his own box. You're like, chances are, mate, that 1-2 is not going to come off. And suddenly Vela had a little bit of room. The way that Vela took his second goal, you're like, hang on a second. There's a bit of swagger about this LAFC thing. And then obviously with the OG shortly after the interval. And like, it's just so inexplicable for any team to lose a 3-goal lead. It was just not... You felt, when I was watching it, you felt, right, listen, they're going to spring Zlatan from the bench. You know what? It's what's likely is that he's going to get a goal. You know, he's going to get a header. It's going to maybe be 3-1. You know, possibly 3-2. There'll be a nervous kind of finale. But 3-0, come on. We all know how this normally plays out. And then, as you said, the whole thing was just ripped to shreds, basically.
I think credit to Ziggy Schmidt on this as well, because at 3-0, like, what's going through my head is, do you really want to bring Ibrahimovic into this game now? Because, like, it's kind of mission impossible. Like, it's an impossible situation you're putting him in. So really, you're going to disappoint, you know, maybe give him 5 minutes at the end, right? Just so you can acknowledge the crowd. But do you really want to put him on at 3-0 down and create, you know, this disappointment because he couldn't turn around a 3-0 deficit? Now, you know, they get to 3-1, so it's maybe changing a little bit. But I thought it was a kind of pretty gutsy call by Ziggy Schmidt to throw him into that. Maybe he had nothing left at that time, and maybe it was just a Hail Mary pass. But he did throw him, and it kind of changed the game. Now, you know, LAFC, and maybe it's not. It's more, this. What I'm going to mention here, Owen, is just a feeling that I've got, and I've got nothing to back up the comments. I've got no analysis and specifics and statistics, but it seems to me I'm seeing an awful lot of chances and an awful lot of goals being created by midfield players getting balls played into them from the defenders into areas like 30, 40. 45 yards out from their own goal, and they just haven't got the technical ability to keep it, and they're getting nailed and possessions, and it was kind of like that first goal that Los Angeles scored, right? They were asking too much technically of, I can't remember who got dispossessed, but they were just asking too much technically of, he didn't have the ability. Either he wasn't getting shouts, but it's almost like the coaches are saying, we're going to play out from the back, and through so many NES MLS teams now, but in some cases the technical ability and the wherewithal the players just isn't up to playing that way. And I'm just seeing a lot of chances and a lot of goals being created from that kind of situation.
Well, because as well, I mean, it ultimately comes down to awareness, right? That positional awareness where, you know, everybody wants the luxury of the first touch. Sometimes, given where you are on a pitch,
if you're in trouble, just knock it back.
It gives you a breathing space. And normally, some people just dwell so much on trapping that ball and then turning with it. And like as you said, I mean, like that first goal for LAFC, I mean, you're on the edge of your own area, you're trying to get turned on that with probably two midfielders coming upon you to close you down. You're either going to be very, very quick and let that ball just flow from you and into a wide position, and suddenly, yeah, you can breathe a little bit, or... what, you know, chances are, what's more likely is that you're going to get swallowed up and possession's going to get coughed up and suddenly you're really under the cosh. So I guess it's maybe a reflection and probably a reminder that in terms of MLS as a league, in terms of that technical quality that players have, there's also other things at play. There's a kind of a wider vision that you have when you're on a pitch. There's a wider awareness that you have in terms of the parameters of a pitch. But it doesn't help, obviously, when like that you've got a player that passes a ball to you and instantly tries to make a run for you to let him, and normally you just drop back in the pocket and have a bit of a get out of jail card. You know, maybe I might be a little bit harsh on Ashley Cole. Obviously he had his kind of resurrection moment later on when he slotted in that cross for Zlatan, but you know, I do hear you that sometimes you know, that there is that sort of, that, you know, you just want to take a bit of a breath and then suddenly it's too late and it's gone and yeah. you kind of live to regret it. But you know what, it's you know, I think it's when you do find those players, and there are very few of them who make it look like they've got time on a ball, they make it look like a, you know, it's a kind of a natural thing. It's actually a bit of a second coming. If you can make it look like you've got time on a football pitch, you know, the world is kind of your oyster. And I think that you're probably in that stage with MLS where you still first instinct is to take a touch, and sometimes that can be suicidal almost.
I can kill it. Just to finish off thoughts on the first El Tráfico derby. I was kind of amazed, and I didn't really make any issue of it on Twitter, and I didn't post anything on it, but the number of people that came on and said it was a blatant offside. Now, it might well have been offside, the winning goal, but it wasn't blatant. But, like, it was a matter of inches. I got the impression that a lot of people were coming on Twitter judging the blatant offside by the fact that Ibrahimovic was the other side of the defenders and they had no sort of they'd no awareness that the ball was almost in line with them, if not in line with them. It's where you're not offside because you're the goal side of the defenders. You've got to look at where the ball is first.
But also, was there not a thing, however many years ago, where the benefit of the doubt was to the attacker? Is that not just me?
That's what yeah, like that was my kind of point. Ultimately, if you draw a line there, you freeze the action and all the rest. He might have been off by half a foot, but it was certainly not blatant.
But I saw all these things. I saw all these things on social media where it was like, listen guys, we've got the isolated camera angle from Fox, we know it's blurry, but we've got a blown up here, and this categorically, well, hang on a second, what are we doing talking about this? Like this?
No, but it never did. But that's my point. That's my point is, so many of them, I think so many people were talking about them being the other side of the defenders, and not thinking the position of the ball had any relevance whatsoever, where the position of the ball had the primary relevance. Because otherwise, like, it's a cutback, right? Or it's a cutback or it's a square ball, and you can't be offside in a cutback or a square ball.
Exactly. The other thing on this, how did you feel about... obviously, Zlatan bullet header and all that sort of stuff. Goalkeeper on that?
Bloody awful.
Yeah.
There was 11 shots and 7 goals in that game, and both teams should get rid of both their goalkeepers. That sums up my thoughts on that game. Anyway, that brings us to the end of part one. We'll be back with part two in a couple of seconds.
You're listening to Soccer Report Extra. Keep up to speed with the podcast and get all the latest news, musings, and rants from Bobby and Owen by liking us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to part two of Soccer Report Extra podcast. Owen, big game on Sunday in the Premier League. Chelsea went a goal up, and at that point, it kind of looked like Champions League spot was back in. It was becoming a possibility again for Chelsea. By the end of the game, 3-1, Tottenham. Chelsea now 8 points behind, 7 games to go. It looks very, very
distinct possibility that Chelsea will miss out with Champions League for the second time in 3 years. Tottenham were just a better team. I don't know what more I can say in this game than after Morata scored, Spurs were just much better than Chelsea.
Well, it seemed... I mean, we've talked about this, haven't we, already earlier in this season, where football still has that capacity to surprise me when you have a reigning Premier League champion in Chelsea and they go into a game like this and suddenly you're very aware of like a pendulum dramatically swinging in a certain direction where, like, as you said, Tottenham win this game 3-1 and you really cannot argue. It's not like a contentious refereeing decision. It's not something that Antonio Conte can kind of hold on to. It's just that Tottenham were better and you don't really know where that leaves a reigning Premier League champion. You don't really know where it leaves their coach. All you do know is that it leaves Tottenham once again with that sort of result where they can kind of stick their chest out and deal with a bit of bravado and be proud of themselves and all that sort of stuff. The one thing I would say is I couldn't really dwell too much on this in the moment, but Christian Eriksen, absolutely a ridiculous equaliser he scored for Tottenham. But just prior to that, I'm not sure, again, it comes maybe back to goalkeepers and all that sort of stuff, but just prior to scoring, with that rasping kind of right footer that went in under the underside of the bar and gave Willy Caballero...
And right over Caballero.
He had another shot that was... It wasn't from as much of an angle. It was pretty much central. But Caballero seemed to have a lot of difficulty with that in terms of the strike, in terms of maybe any sort of movement in the air. And even though it was pretty central, Caballero, he patted it really kind of straight in front of him, and obviously then you're kind of relying on your reaction as a goalkeeper to kind of get out and smother it. But as soon as Eriksen scored with that spectacular strike, my mind instantly went back to them and I thought, I'm not sure, has that influenced Caballero a little bit in terms of, because he's obviously got under that ball, there's a bit of movement in the air and he's caught it on its sweet spot. And that was just a kind of a subplot to it, really. It was just one thing that I wanted to throw at you in terms of, did you...
The thing is as well, though, Caballero, like, I think it was the second half, a save he had from Son, Son was an absolutely terrific save. So it was a kind of very inconsistent. And let's face it, Hugo Lloris didn't look exactly brilliant on the goal, the Chelsea goal either. I think Lloris, game in, game out, against regular opposition, is a very good goalkeeper. I continually feel that he just finds the big games to make mistakes in that really hurt Spurs more often than you think it should if they had a goalkeeper that kind of, just like a goal scorer stepping forward and getting the big goal. But so often he seems to make a mistake in a big game, and that's why I don't rate him as highly as some of the other goals. Like, I don't rate him as high as, say, David De Gea or the kind of season that Ederson's had, or even a Courtois who hasn't been absolutely, he's absolutely best this year. But that's why I kind of think he's even against an up-and-coming goalkeeper like a Pickford or a Jack Butland.
I think that's
where he kind of comes up short a little bit. But I think looking at that Spurs equaliser, it wasn't just the goal and the type of goal in the goalkeeper, but it was the timing of the goal as well. Right? Chelsea must have had in their minds here, we're getting a half time, we're going to be 1-0 up. We're going to get in the dressing room. Conte's going to talk to us. He's going to tell how to manage the game in the second half, and we're going to go out and do it.
And because they hadn't been too bad up to that point either.
No, and then it was almost like a stake through the heart of Chelsea. Come the second half, like the ball from Dier was a great ball from Dier, but it was very straightforward, right down the heart. It's the kind of goal that Arsenal usually concede, right down the middle of the park. And certainly great touch from Dele Alli. And then you look at the third Tottenham goal. Like, how many chances did Chelsea have to clear that ball?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it was terrible defending. Just awful. And so what you would think would be on kind of Conte like. So where's he going to finish up on? Where's he going? Is he going to PSG?
Well, the thing is, I mean, this is... where we are left in terms of Chelsea and Conte is that there's absolutely no sense of surprise, you know, come this summer when he does bid farewell to Stamford Bridge. Tottenham's first win at Chelsea since 1990.
28 years.
That is absolutely astonishing.
Yeah,
when
it's
you look
before
at
Premier League era,
that is it. I mean, what, there was life before the Premier League? Goodness me. The other thing for Chelsea here is, like, we can categorically say that Conte is gone. Obviously, the rumours intensify about him and Paris Saint-Germain. Where do Chelsea go? Because this is Chelsea now, who have been Premier League champions. They've brought in the best Italian coach in Antonio Conte, and now that experiment has completely fallen on its arse. What sort of direction do they take as a club? They've lost Michael Emanalo earlier in the season. It seems to be a really, really, and it sounds so ridiculous to say that it seems like a seismic transition period for Chelsea, considering the fact that last May they were crowned Premier League champions. But here we are. This is how quick football moves on, and no one's got any sense of nostalgia or any sense of credit in the bank. It's dust yourself down and move on and let's appoint someone new. So in terms of, you know, we can maybe say that Conte is possibly a shoe-in for the PSG job. Where did Chelsea go?
Let me take that Conte one at PSG. I'll tell you why Conte is not the right man at PSG.
Okay.
Because PSG want to do well in Europe. Conte has not got a track record of doing well in European competition at the club level.
Where are they going to go, though?
PSG or Conte?
PSG, in terms of a manager with a consistent European pedigree.
Well, it could be a case of they go for Conte, but still makes it a mistake, right?
True.
They got the money, but, you know, why would you... It's really not much of a challenge for a coach to know that they're going to be judged by whether or not they get to the semi-final or final or win the Champions League, right? And you're actually going to... You could potentially do the treble. You could do the French League Cup, the French Cup, and win the league.
Listen, the Coupe de la Ligue is a very strong tournament, okay? I mean,
you're going to be dismissed as a failure. That's
true.
The bottom line, because there's no competition there, and this is where the PSG... Talk about real estate, well, location, location, location. This is where the PSG kind of mindset and the strategy all falls apart, because there's not enough competition to keep them sharp enough in Europe. And as I say, I don't think Conte has ever, up to now, has not shown that he's capable of kind of turning that, performing well in the Champions League. Back to Chelsea, like, where do they go? Do they go for Tuchel, maybe? Tuchel's still sitting there as the Grim Reaper waiting for an appointment someplace.
You do get that feeling, isn't he?
He's not quite the David
O'Leary.
He's just
waiting at the bus stop, isn't he?
He's appearing
in
the
bus
stands.
Stop until one comes past him.
Yeah, there was the rumour of Tuchel being at Arsenal, which, like, why anybody would be nonsensical enough to suggest that Tuchel is going to go to Arsenal after the falling out.
But also, does it also not require the Chelsea job? Does it not require a certain type? I mean, you saw Ancelotti in the sort of personality type that he had, which is a kind of a more thoughtful, more quiet sort of guy, and he goes in there and, yeah, he's worked with those kind of totalitarian sort of owners before, and Berlusconi, it's nothing new for him, and obviously he had... you know, Real Madrid sort of stuff, and he goes to the Chelsea, blah blah blah, and he's been a PSG and all, it fits into his profile. Tuchel, do you think he's got that personality type to be alongside a Russian oligarch as an owner and the kind of political sort of backroom stuff that goes on with it?
But here's the thing, Owen, you only have to do it for 2 years. Right? How many managers have lasted more than 2 years?
True.
Not many, right?
So therefore, is Tuchel going into the job with the right intention, or is Tuchel going into the job thinking, this is a decent business proposition for me to take on.
It's certainly a step up for him if he goes to Chelsea.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
You know, he's had his time at Dortmund, so it's a step up.
And also,
you know, getting fired by Chelsea doesn't really hurt your
you're
career
part,
anymore.
You're part of a pretty good sort of dinner party, right?
Yeah, it's like getting divorced by Zaza Gabor. At some point, people go, yeah, just a matter of when.
You and whose army? Actually, quite a considerable army. Look at all of them outside the door there.
So, okay. You know, at some point, there's not a knock against you.
Also, that there is the element of if, possibly when, Chelsea do finish the season outside the top four, don't have Champions League, you know, elite European football to concern themselves. Possibly for someone like Tuchel, it's a good opportunity to walk in there when you're picking up the pieces from a disappointing season where, yep, you know, suddenly...
Which is the way Conte went, right?
Mm, exactly.
Now, Conte had the advantage of not having to bother about the Europa League. It was a completely free run. And Chelsea, when they won the league last year... Next year, not looking that way, and it looks like they're going to be Europa League as well, so they've got to make a decision on how much effort they put into the Europa League. So that's something else to contend with, but it certainly is, you know, as we've seen with the Europa League, it's not a bad competition, but it's certainly, there's a lot bigger room for error in the Europa League in games than they ever see in most Champions League games, certainly when you get to that last 16 or the last 8.
What does this also mean, if anything, for Chelsea's elite high-profile personnel? Does this mean that come the summertime, there's a little bit more flexibility in terms of pesky agents and pesky other teams getting involved in trying to persuade the likes of Eden Hazard to leave the club?
Yeah, here's the thing, right, with the icy way in Hazard, and it's not going to be a popular opinion with Chelsea, but I would suggest that he's got to the stage where he's done as much as he can with Chelsea.
Mm.
And it's time to move on.
Interesting. I would agree with you. I think that certainly for the time that he's spent at the club so far, you know, it's unlikely that they're going to feature at the major crux of a season in terms of elite European competition. I think that there's certainly been a shift in terms of the momentum of other clubs and the potential they have for winning Champions League titles or even getting close to it. I think Chelsea right now seems so far detached from that. So I think, yeah, it's in terms of again, it's always that thing you come back to when there's a transition at a team, a managerial change, the knock-on effect that it has in terms of the psychology of those key players thinking, do you know what, am I right to start looking at my options here and possibly look somewhere else?
And remember, we can't forget that the dynamic is this summer is a little bit is a dynamic that happens every four
True.
years. It's a World Cup year, right? Hazard has got the ability to go to the World Cup, and you know he's a star player now. He's a well-known global player, but he's got the ability, I think, to move up a notch or two into that kind of maybe the top five players in the world potentially, if he has a great World Cup, because he has got that. He's got that kind of ability. He's got this magical ability to go past players at pace. He's got the ability to create goals. He's got the ability to take goals as well. Like, he's a very, very very good player, and I just think that if he's at that stage in his career, he's going, what's he now, probably, I'm thinking he's what, 27 28?
I'm not sure. I'm sure Luke will help us out with that, but also
we'll find that out.
Does it also translate to essentially two teams being able to sign him, which is Real Madrid or Paris Saint-Germain
or Barcelona? But Barcelona won't, because they've pretty much set, right, they've spent tons of money on Coutinho. They've spent tons of money on Dembele, so they'd have to move one of them along. He's 27. He just turned 27 in January.
I'm just thinking, Gareth Bale to move away from Real Madrid.
He's got to, yeah. Well, I go back
Eden
to
Hazard,
I know
potentially.
This. Yeah, I know this is kind of old hat, and we've been talking about from the beginning of the season. But Ronaldo, Benzema, or Bale, one of them's got to go. At least one of them's got to go, I think, this summer, potentially even two. And if you're looking at his arm, he's 27, right? It should be the beginning of his peak years in the position.
This
plays.
Is the move, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the big one.
Yeah. This is the one that he's got to. If he doesn't move now, you know, has his chance kind of gone? Perhaps.
I think. Well, when he joined Chelsea initially, you know, it was that signing where you think, oh, this is gonna be the long term commitment from Chelsea. This is gonna be the player that they build a team around. And you know, I always felt that Hazard was going to be a United player. Ferguson had watched him a couple of times, and the story is obviously that United balked at the transfer fee that Lille wanted for him at the time, and they signed Kagawa instead, and that was the kind of the arrangement that United came to at the time. And not to say that if Hazard had moved to United, he'd still be there either, but Chelsea is that sort of team that, you know, every 18 months or so has the potential to blow up, and there needs to be, it's kind of a bit of a soap opera, isn't it, that you're always a couple of minutes away from a dramatic storyline change, and the introduction of a new character.
Yeah, and the other thing you look at, we talked about how old he was, but the thing is his contract is till 2020, so we're in that magic 2-year period, right? Chelsea are going to maximise, they've got to get him either sign that contract to extend it past 2020, or they've got to sell him. The good news for Chelsea is he's going to be maximum value at that point. They'll get top dollar for him. So anyway, that brings us to the end of part two of the Soccer Report Extra podcast. We'll be back in part three, and we'll bring in producer Luke Crawford to fact check what we've been telling you.
You're listening to Soccer Report Extra with Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan. Be sure to follow them both on Twitter. Links are in the show notes below. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to part three of the Soccer Report Extra podcast, and this is where we bring in producer Luke Crawford, who's been working away diligently fact-checking all the stuff we've been telling you over the last 30 minutes or so. Anything stand out this week, Luke? Anything you can catch us on? Anything you can fill in for us, for the listeners? Extra added value, let us say.
No.
Wow.
Not this week.
You're welcome. You're welcome, listeners.
I do have a couple of things. Well, the one thing I was just so impressed by is Letan's MLS debut. I thought it was really impressive, and I always had this. I really enjoyed the play of Juan Román Riquelme, and I always thought that if, instead of going back to Boca Juniors after he left Villarreal, it would have been great if he had played in MLS for a couple of seasons. I thought, you know, some of these players are just so, they have such skill that they're kind of timeless. So you know, he had such ease on the ball. I think you guys were talking about that, not having that competent player on the ball in midfield in MLS all the time, or there's not a lot of depth there possibly in the league. Somebody like Riquelme would have been such an eye opener in the MLS.
Yeah. But,
that was that. And then the other thing that you guys were talking about, I just wanted to go through. Sorry, Gabor was her birth name, but affectionately known as
Sorry
Zsa Zsa.
Seems to be the hardest word.
Born in Budapest, Austria-Hungary, February 6th, 1917. Died at the age of 99, December 18th, 2016.
A big fan of Puskás, I hear, and the great Hungarian.
Anyways, I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 husbands.
How many did Liz Taylor end up with? 8?
Well, it was a pity, because another 2 and she could have had a start in 11.
she almost had her own team.
Zsa Zsa All-Star team.
Lord knows somebody would have marketed that and actually made it a thing.
Well, how many other podcasts you start off talking about soccer and you finish up talking about Zsa Zsa Gabor? But anyway, that brings us to the end of the Soccer Report Extra podcast for this week. Big week coming up. This is recorded on Monday. Got CONCACAF Champions League, we've got
proper Champions League,
UEFA Champions League, we've got Europa League, we're back to normal.
It's going
to
be huge. For someone who's so keen to snuggle, you
cause a lot of trouble. Thanks for listening to Soccer Report Extra. To keep tabs on the podcast and get all the latest news, musings and rants from Bobby and Owen, like us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Music for this podcast graciously provided by Manitoba's hottest indie pop group, Misery Slims. Check them out on Spotify and YouTube, and follow the band on Facebook at Misery Slims.